I need you need to make out a list, okay? Remind Jerry to record.
A potato list.
Actually, I can't blame Diane for that. I assigned her a Sunday, but I didn't assign her Tuesday night.
Okay.
Paula, maybe we'll assign you for Tuesday. Is that okay?
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not a big schedule person anymore.
you won't be. You're just a reminder.
Oh, I can do that. Yes.
Yeah. That's all we need. That's all I need. Because once I get on a roll, as you probably noticed, there's no stopping me. List be damned, okay? We're just going to go ahead. Whatever happens. So as we're here, thanks for reminding me of that, Greg. I'd like you to close your eyes for a minute. And I'll do the same thing for myself. And I'd like us to get in touch with our I am-ness. To allow ourselves to get in touch with our I am-ness. Notice that the mind will probably question that. It's okay, because it's not of the mind. But there's an awareness that beyond all duality, we're seeing through all duality, there is an I am-ness that we are all participants in. And this is our contribution to ourselves, to one another, to all creation. And whatever we do next, whatever we share, whatever we take in, whatever we give forth, will be a celebration of that I am-ness. Get in touch with the rhythm of your breathing. Open, soften. You can open your eyes when you're ready. Welcome, Kathy. You made it, huh? You're on mute. Kathy, you're on mute. There you go. I think you're still on mute. Don't worry about it. We can read lips. We know you're glad you're here. Okay. As I was reading over tonight's lesson, whatever that entails, talks about being in the upper room, which I know we're familiar with that terminology. But what occurred to me was a directive, if you can call it that. I'm not quite sure what the word is to use for this, but a directive that came from one of my English literature teachers years ago. I was talking about novels and fantasy, primarily fantasy works. And he said, you know, when we enter into a work of, we can use these words, I think, when we enter into a work of another form or another layer of consciousness, then what we do is we create what he called the willful suspension of disbelief. The willful suspension. In other words, we enter into another world and we say, that's just as real as the one we're in. I just happen to be busy. So, and I love that stuff. I'm a Lord of the Rings freak, okay? I'm a fantasy freak from day one. So I love, swords and sorcery and all of that stuff. I just eat that up. So it's so interesting that I find myself, let's say, in one, quote, reality, and then I move into another one. And what I don't realize is that the one that I'm moving, I know the one that I'm moving to is a fantasy, but I don't realize that the one I'm moving out of is also a fantasy. Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. And so here we are tonight, sharing insights in the Book of Revelations that allow us to be in the upper room, which is a reflection of our willful suspension of disbelief. In other words, the upper room is just as real or more real than, quote, this reality that we're sitting in right now. And what's so interesting is we don't even have to challenge that for the next 45 minutes. We just are. There are still questions sometimes. There are things we want to get clarified for ourselves or for one another. But none of that takes away from what I might call the ambiance of being in the upper room. A place where, according to the guides in the book, say this on page 90, in the upper room, there is no scale or barometer to decide you, to define you, to claim you beloved, to claim you beyond the small self, because the small self is not operating at this level. The small self is there, but it's not operating on this level. And as you are free of the instructions that the small self has used to navigate a reality in lower vibration, in other words, all those rules we created for ourselves, just what we talked about, you are free to claim what can be claimed beyond the systems of logic that have been endowed upon your species through the millennia. What this means is that collective agreement to manifestation and limitation can be transcended by one who is not bound by the scale of reason or possibility that is defined by previous information that has either been coerced or settled upon by all of you. In other words, you don't have to stay where you think you are. And you don't have to hold on to the definition that you've been given of yourself, no matter what that might happen to be. If you realize, again, here comes that word, if you realize that practically everything we are experiencing in our perception is an illusion. Not that it's unreal, and that's kind of silly, but that it's constantly changing. And that even the body that I lived in, the body that's speaking these words, because it takes a fraction of time for the words to come out of my mouth to go into your ears. The body that's speaking those words is not there anymore. Oof. It's not there anymore. The ears that heard that message a few moments ago is not there anymore. That's why it's an illusion, because it only exists in, it's gone. Here I am, wasn't I? An example, Paul says. You live to be the age you perceive yourself to be. And how you understand age is through a shared calendar, an agreement to time that in and of itself is a decision that you have claimed and have been bound by. You got to give a listen. I'll see if I can remember to send this along in our reflection. But there's an old Simon and Garfunkel song called Old Friends. Okay. It's really, really touching and really, really beautiful. But it's saying exactly that same thing. Here is a mold that Paul Simon created in his mind of what it's going to look like to grow. One of the lines in there, how terribly strange to be 70. Wow. How terribly. And of course, that's a 21-year-old thinking that. How terribly strange to be 70. Or as somebody once said, and I really love this one, it's really funny when you realize you're the same age as old people. Oh, really? Yeah, really. We are not saying you will exist forever in form, but the man who believes in age and expects to become old in certain ways is quite well guaranteed that experience. You create that reality. Oh, but my genes, my father had this, I will certainly have it. Perhaps you may. Perhaps you may learn through that experience. Well, that's interesting. Perhaps you may have the experience you predicted for yourself. Let's say that came from the genes from your father. Perhaps you will also learn from that. So even though you might be creating a reality in your mind that doesn't have to exist the way you think it does, you might also at the same time be creating something you're going to be able to learn from. Isn't that interesting? So we don't get into condemnation. Oh, I created that message. This is what growing old looks like because this is the way it looked like to my dad, and getting all lost in that conundrum that we've created for ourselves, or even stopping from it and saying, oh, I created that fearful or limiting thought so I could learn from it. Wow, isn't that interesting? So I don't even condemn my limited thinking. If I'm aware enough, I realize that my limited thinking might be creating a reality that I've requested to learn something from. There's a whole new twist. Instead of getting out and saying, here I am beating myself up for creating a limiting reality. Okay? Not that you would ever do that. But instead of doing that, stopping from it, you know, I've created this limitation in my mind, and maybe I've created to learn from it. Wow. That's an interesting piece.
Jerry, Joan here. As you were talking, I hope I can explain this. I was thinking of the term epigenetics, and you mentioned genes and how and I believe it, now know that our environment influences how our genes express themselves. And at one point, I was locked into saying that genes are what's going to determine my biology. So sometimes when I think of these types of situations or understanding of science, it helps me to loosen up on the concreteness that I might have in my mind about a certain way that reality should look like. Mm-hmm. But actually, it doesn't. It has more to do with my thoughts than it does my body.
Thank you. I think we talked about that somewhat the time before last, or it might have been Sunday, actually. We were talking about perception And perception by its very nature is limited, because my perception is created by what I've already experienced in my life, or my, let's put it this way, my interpretation of what I've already experienced in my life, and what I've read about, what I've thought about, whatever else might have contributed to that. That's my perception of reality, or whatever that is. And I recognize that that's limited. The term you're mentioning here, Joan, which I think is somewhat applicable, I don't want to get overly scientific about it, but being an old biology teacher, you know, recognize that there's been an age-old discussion that will probably continue for many, many lifetimes about what we call nature and nurture, right? Nature being my genetic makeup, let's say, if I'm talking about my physical body, and nurture being what has occurred, what has happened to me, on the outside that I've taken in one way or another. And obviously they're both active. They both have a role to play. But when I make one more important than the other, let's say if I make my genetic makeup more important, let's say I say that's where this came from, then I kind of get lost in the shuffle. I get stuck in being fixated by one thing or another. There was another thought I had there, and I don't want to mess it up too much. No, I think you said it very well, Joan. Thank you.
Jerry?
Yeah.
I heard something interesting the other day that is on topic with what you're talking about right now. And when Joan was talking about the human body and DNA and the worldly learnings of all of this, the thing I heard the other day was a spiritual learning, a spiritual teaching. And it didn't have to do with anything with the body. It was that it was a mother and a son, and the son had agreed in heaven and made a contract with this woman, his mother, that the boy was going to die. And they made a contract together that they would accept it and learn from this lesson. And I like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was something they understood they were coming back to learn. It wasn't in science. It wasn't in DNA. It wasn't in genes. It was something that was already predestined.
Predestined.
They made it. Yeah, they had made this. I heard someone say this the other day that these two had made a contract in heaven that this was going to be part of the journey and they would learn this. And it helped them.
That's cool.
It was a learning experience. It was a part of the journey.
There's a great little movie called Made in Heaven, starring Timothy Hutton and Kelly McGillis. It's probably about 20, 30 years old, but it's about this couple who met one another in heaven, and it happened to become, not to blow the story too much, but Kelly McGillis, it's her time to incarnate back on planet Earth. And it's not Timothy Hutton's time yet. But he said, it's close. So I'll make a deal. I am going to find you. And it's just an absolutely beautiful movie about how they eventually gone through all of these hoops to jump through, how they actually had definitely found one another. And wouldn't it be interesting to think that maybe that's happened to each one of us somehow or another.
Mm-hmm.
That we made a pact in another world, a higher dimension. Maybe there's just this group here right now.
I believe it is.
We are going to find one another. Isn't that interesting?
We have.
Because we did.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Don. Good to see you.
Hi, Don.
Let's see, where am I at?
Hi, everybody. I'm going to jump in for one second.
Yeah.
My favorite little book or big book, children's parable, The Little Soul in the Sun, talks about that. written by the guy who wrote Conversations with God.
Neil Walsh.
Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful little book about the two angels, and one's going to teach the other how to have forgiveness by they come incarnate, and one's going to do something really awful to the other.
One of them decides to be the bad guy. I'll volunteer to be the bad guy. I will volunteer to be the bad guy, so you will learn forgiveness. Mm-hmm. Wow. I will take on the role of Donald Trump. So you can learn ... Are you willing to do that? Because right. I'm willing to do that. I am willing to take on that disguise to teach you ...
Huh?
What a way of looking at things, huh?
Thank you, Donald.
Yeah.
That's what I've wondered. Many times I have felt that he is in a role for us to be able to really look at ourselves.
And the poor schlump doesn't realize it, okay?
No. He can't, or he wouldn't be, he couldn't maneuver like he does.
That was an awful thing to say. Let's cross that line.
but it's true.
He's a good teacher.
The truth. He will go down in history as such not knowing.
Let me overlap just a little bit here.
So we've all had to be somewhat like Donald Trump to recognize his behavior.
If you see it out there, guess what? It's going on in here.
Oh boy, wake up call.
If I saw you as the truth of who you, see, that's what Neil Donald Walsh's book Funny ends with. I see the truth of who you are. I see this little angel who volunteered to be the bad guy. I couldn't see that before when you were being bully, when you were being angry, when you were being this, when you were being mean. I could not see it because I was all wrapped up in my personal perception of who you are. And it wasn't until I got back into my angelic self, the upper room, my higher consciousness, that I could begin to see you as a higher consciousness as well. Oh. Heavy duty. Let me overlap there just a little bit. Because I want to keep this flow going if I can. We are not saying you will exist forever in form. But the man who believes in age and expects to become old in certain ways is quite well guaranteed that experience. Oh, but my genes, my father had this, I will certainly have it. Perhaps you may. Here's the one we really jumped off on. Perhaps you may learn through that experience. But to define yourself in expectation of that experience is to hand over your will to a decision that was made by others who came before you. Let me say that one again. That's really important to me. But to define yourself in expectation of that experience is to hand over your will to a decision that was made by others who came before you. The claim I am free is, in fact, the claim of liberation from systems of control, agreements made in fear, and the collective mind that believes what it was taught and will seek to confirm the old because it cannot conceive of something more possibly could exist. So when I'm living in lower vibration, I am living in a very limited sense of truth, but sometimes I don't even realize that. It's like the only way I can realize I have blinders on is by taking them off. Someone or something has to come along that takes the blinders, that lets the scales fall from my eyes. Okay. And it might be someone like a politician. It might be someone that we can't stand. It might be someone that really challenges our viewpoint of quote reality, what that might happen to be. So it's really interesting that we find ourselves in this notice what we need in the past 5 or 10 minutes. We could have made a lot of judgments about ourselves or about somebody else. And I didn't feel that happening. Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting? Being in a place of higher consciousness, recognizing that I could be making judgments here. I could be in a lower level of consciousness if I choose to be. I don't choose to be there. I choose to be in an open, flowing state of higher consciousness, no matter how you you don't have to define that. That's just where I choose to be. And part of that is because we chose one another, which again is really kind of interesting when you think about it. Again, to the upper room, higher consciousness, Christ consciousness. Everything exists in the upper room to be renown, to be reclaimed in divine accord. How can I see this differently? I could see peace instead of this. Choose once again. A teacup may be known in low octave or high octave. It's still a teacup, but the vibration of the teacup in the upper room or the higher octave is resonantly different as you go up the scale. I'm not even about to define what that means. You're going to have to decide that for yourself. Teacup's still a teacup. Well, I'll give you an example of that. I have a little tray above the sink in our kitchen that has a number of different coffee cups and coffee mugs. And one of them was given to me as a gift by a group that I did, a therapy group that I had at Old Baptist Hospital, Baptist Highlands Hospital, about probably about 40 years ago. And it has everybody's name on it. There were only about 5 or 6 people in that group. And it said something like, to shake the tree of life and to bear down fruit of impossible love. Now that's a coffee mug. And I could just use it as a coffee mug. But you can see how much more than a coffee mug it is. Because it has so much more value than just being a coffee mug. So depending upon where I'm at, but see, what's really interesting, I can never take that coffee cup down without thinking about those people. Okay, yeah. Without thinking about the message of loving kindness that they gave me that still exists. The group existed 35 years ago, but the loving kindness is still here. And it would even be here even if the cup didn't exist anymore. But I'm just using that as a little example. Here's a coffee mug that's more than a coffee mug, depending upon how I want to look at it. It's still a teacup, but the vibration of the teacup in the upper room or the higher octave is resonantly different as you go up the scale. Now you could stretch that a little bit. Let's suppose it wasn't a gift from somebody. Let's suppose it was an ordinary Heine Brothers coffee mug. It was nice, but didn't have any special value any other way. Lower vibration, it's a coffee mug. Higher vibration. People labored over this coffee mug. People dug up the mud and the acrylics that are part of this whole thing. Maybe some poor paisan in Mexico, right, dug up the adobe that became part of this coffee cup. And then I start thinking about all of the people, all of the dynamics, all of the energy that went into creating this particular coffee cup for me. That's a little bit less tangible than it was with the group that I was familiar with, but I could do the same thing. I could still see this coffee cup, this coffee mug, in a higher sense of reality if I chose to. It stretches me, part of my little self was it just pour the coffee, will you? Get your heart out of the picture. You need to wake up. The same is true for the body through the claim, I know what I am. I was waiting in a doctor's office this morning, sitting in a rather crowded doctor's office. And I realized as I was sitting there, all I was seeing were bodies. I went, oh. Because in my mind, I was going, I wonder what they're here for. All I was seeing was bodies. And it was a rather rude awakening, saying, well, here's this marvelous spiritual being, and all I can see are in this whole room is bodies. And so I wouldn't say I worked on it, but I want to say, how can I shift my consciousness to realize that these are all unique expressions of the divine? And some of them know that, and some of them don't. And I don't know which ones are which. So I'll send love to every one of them. That's my job. My job isn't to wake somebody up. My job is to send them love wherever they might happen to be. Very different from just seeing a room full of bodies. And the same is true in your experience of your world as you become the perceiver who is not responding to historical data, but the revelation of the divine that may be seen by the one who knows who she is. So you can only be, I have to be awake enough to realize you're not just a body. And the act of will that is required here is a very simple one. If you have a book, I'd like you to say this out loud with me. And if you don't, just take it in. I am aligning the divine will to all that I encounter. I become as divine will in my acquiescence to it. And I allow the divine to decide with me, as me, and for me, as I become one in tone, in vibration, with the amplitude of the true self expressed as will, the divine as will, the divine as me, the divine as you. And let me just read that out loud to you again. You don't have to do anything else but just listen, just take it in. It's very simple language, but it's a powerful, powerful act of creation. Because that's what's happening. This is a creative act. It's a manifestation. It's the realization of something that's already here. But it's pulling away the veils of illusion that might get in the way. I am aligning the divine will to all that I encounter. All that I encounter. I become as divine will. In my acquiescence to it, in my surrender to it, in my letting go of my small self. And I allow the divine to decide with me, as me, and for me, as I become one in tone, in vibration, with the amplitude of the true self expressed as will, the divine will. Here's I wouldn't say explanation, but here's that in a nutshell. The divine as what you are in alignment is the act of will as the divine force that expresses itself in certainty upon this plane. when we realize, when I realize I am a unique expression of divine creativity. And when I get in tune, when I get in tune with that, I am living in and out of the truth of that as well. Everything that I do, everything that I touch, everything that I experience becomes a reflection of that truth. Again, that's something that's so beautiful about coming together on a Tuesday evening or a Sunday morning.
Jerry.
And being in that energy. Yes.
That reminds me of when I was sharing last week about I was being in, the small self was telling me, you're just the housewife. You don't, you know, I couldn't get find any value in my life, yada, yada. Well, when the divine spirit or the divine will spoke, I heard its voice. It spoke with certainty. It said, that's not true. It took over. And said, that's not the truth of who you are. And that's not who you are. And that's how that it was so helpful because it was such a certainty that took over.
Yeah, I can hear that. One of my incarnations during this lifetime was I was still a brother, but I was living by myself, which was a request that I made because I really wanted I wanted somewhat of a little bit of a monkish existence because I'm a diehard introvert. And I really needed some, I was working with people all day long practically, and I really needed some time for myself, by myself. So I was living in a little carriage house apartment off Douglas Boulevard, off Bardstown Road, if you're familiar with that neighborhood around there. And a realtor friend of mine turned me on to this, and it was the rent was unbelievably cheap. And it was a nice, just little place for me to live in. Perfect. And I can remember one Sunday morning, no, it was Sunday afternoon, I think it was. I was sitting in one of my chairs and I had my guitar and I was just messing around with some music. And I was feeling a little bit down. No particular reason, I just was. And I thought to myself, I wonder what it would be like to get a sense of what God thinks about me. Because when I'm thinking about myself isn't very uplifting. It's not bad, it's not terrible. I knew I was looking at myself through a very small lens. But I couldn't just change it. I didn't know how to change it by an act of my will. So I remembered sitting there and putting the guitar down and saying, my prayer was, God, Father God, I wasn't into Father, Mother, God yet, so I didn't realize that piece. I said, Father God, what do you think about me? And immediately my mind came in and said, well, maybe you shouldn't have asked that question, okay? You might not like the answer. But what happened was, the immediate answer was, you are my son, and I love you. And I got bowled over. I started crying. And then my thinking mind popped in, my little ego popped in and said, oh, you just made that up. And I almost bought it and said, yeah, I just made that. But I stopped for a minute before I made that judgment on myself. And I realized, because I was open to my own internal awareness, that was too good an answer. I'm good at making up answers to something, but that was too good. I did not have the ability to make that one up. You are my son. I love you. That's who you are. So thanks for reminding me of that, Diane. That's one of my favorite enlightenment experiences. The divine is what you are in alignment, is the act of will as the divine force that expresses itself in certainty upon this plane. In other words, I am open to it. I surrender to it. It's that profound and it's that simple. You don't like where your head's at, surrender to a higher reality. Stop trying to predict what that's going to feel like, what even that's going to look like. But know that when you do surrender to a higher reality, something shifts, something changes. By its very nature, it has to. I could see peace instead of this. Mm-hmm. I could see this differently. I could see myself differently. And so Paul jumps in, as he usually does. What does that mean, uncertainty, he asks. Uncertainty means you are in your knowing, in your gut. Not emotional knowing, not gut sense in terms of emotion, but you know it in your being. You are my son and I love you. There was nothing could be present to contradict that truth, that reality. My mind might try to do that, but it really couldn't. Uncertainty means you are in your knowing, and any act of will is chosen in accord and truth with the who and the what that you are, the divine as you. And the dilemmas of the past, should I, shouldn't I, are actually released as the true self in its mandate claims the world anew. Go back to another sentence we read tonight. Everything exists in the upper room to be re-known, to be reclaimed in divine accord. In the upper room, there is no scale or barometer to decide you, to define you, to claim you beyond the small self, because the small self is not operating at this level. Can't. You become the vibration of the Christ itself. You are the vibration of the Christ itself in this moment. You can't not be. You're also aware of being the Christ itself in this moment, which again, we have a choice about sometimes. Well, actually, we have a choice about it all the time, but I don't remember I have a choice all the time. You become the vibration of the Christ itself in manifestation, in action, and in agreement to everything you see. Underline the word everything. The divine as you, in its perspective, claims the manifest world and lifts it to its present, lifts it to the present moment. Not the past, not the future, right now. It does not confirm negative amplitude or fear. It does not agree to the old because it exists beyond it. It does not confirm collective agreement simply because it exists in a realm that has not been defined by the collective. For instance, we pray for world peace because we want it. We pray for inner peace because we want that as well. Do I believe that that's possible? See, because I can look back historically, say, well, the only time that ever really existed was what was called the Pax Romana for a couple of hundred years, when the Roman Empire, which had taken over most of the, quote, known world, although there was a whole bunch of other parts of the world too, was not at war with anyone or anything. But of course, there were a whole lot of wars going on outside of that particular realm, out of that particular alignment. So here I am praying for world peace. But in order for that prayer to be part of my act of creation as a divine consciousness, I also need to be in the consciousness that it's possible? Am I open to the possibility? Or am I still saying, I'd really love to have world peace, but you know, there never has been world peace, so why should it happen now? And I'm not saying, I'm not trying to make a judgment about that one, but I'm saying that's what blocks or gets in the way of my creation of truth, of my divine consciousness, my divine self manifesting itself. This book talks about, in fact, many of Paul's books talk about this, about being open to one of the missing pieces in our prayer, is being open to the possibility that it can and will happen. I don't have any material proof of that, because it has not existed in the material world. Here's my prayer about something that has not existed in the material world, that I believe in the possibility that it can and will happen. But in order for that prayer to be manifest, for me to be in alignment with divine will, I need to also be in alignment with the possibility that this can and will occur. Now, I resonate an awful lot with something that, and Margot mentioned this to me a while ago, and I mentioned this in another class a while ago, is in Peace Pilgrim. This is one of her followers kind of creating sort of the message, said something to the effect of, when enough people reach a state of inner peace, when enough people reach a state of inner peace, there will be no more war. Kind of like the 100th monkey, you know, we're kind of building up, we're building up a critical mass. There are more people right now who are believing in that than ever have lived before. And creating that possibility more and more, we're doing that tonight. Creating that possibility more and more and more and more and more. Even though we don't see it out there yet. And so it's also true that what I see out there is happening in here. If I'm seeing war, then I'm also seeing conflict within myself. Or I'm looking at myself as being someone or something in conflict. I don't need to do that. I might have used that before as a way of protecting myself, a way of pushing you away. I don't have to do that anymore. Can I be? If I were to approach you, let's say this evening, let me do this right now. If I were to approach you with as open a heart as I possibly could, my small self says, don't do that, you'd be terribly vulnerable. And my higher consciousness says, there's nothing of importance that can be taken away from me. In fact, I can enhance your ability to love by allowing you to love me. I can enhance your ability to love by allowing you to love me. Each one of us can enhance our ability to love by allowing ourselves to be loved.
Jerry.
Yeah. Oh, I just lost you, Diane.
Of these things coming to be, that we can live in peace. We will live in harmony. We will live in love. Aren't we? Doesn't that already exist? It is possible. It is.
Oh, I agree. But we got to believe it.
It's not a possibility. Yeah, it's already is. Okay.
I'll start with this next time because I want to do a meditation right now.
Okay.
Take up too much time doing an explanation. What I want to lead in with next week is there are two kinds of manifestation. One is creating something that doesn't exist yet, and the other is opening yourself to something that already exists as the truth. We'll get into looking at that a little bit more. Let's take a couple minutes, if you don't mind, and close your eyes if you like. Take a couple of breaths. Notice your open-heartedness at this moment. It was nothing that you had to do deliberately to open your heart to stretch. Just there. Just there. And get a sense of what it's like to open ourselves up to the love and compassion coming to us from our brothers and sisters online right now. The love we are giving and the love we are receiving. And in the end, the love you make is equal to the love you take. And that as we continue to walk this part of the journey on planet Earth, that we are continually expanding our capacity for love and for loving. We are continually expanding our capacity for love and for loving. And if you care to, you can take a moment to tune in to the rhythm of your breathing. Breathing in love, breathing out love. This is who you are. Taking all of this with you on whatever levels you need it on. Stretching a bit. And opening your eyes when you're ready. You guys have a great week.
Thank you, Jerry, Margo, everyone.
Thanks, Jerry.
Namaste.
Thanks, everybody. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Kathy.
Stay well. Stay.
So glad to be here.
Yeah.
Good to see glad you, Kathy.
Next and life, I'm having a different computer.
Glad you're back.
Hey, Don. Thank you.
Hey, Don.